You will be incarcerated if you violate any part of that injunction. Okay? I don't want there to be any misunderstanding. When I list a section, you need to read all of the subsections accordingly. You know, and I use the same premise with the camping ordinance. There's A, B, and C. The other one says there's a whole bunch of others. You need to read the subsections. All right, so you need to go from there. And if you do that now, then I will still recommend that you get a warrant, but you'll be able to take care of the children today. But I won't extend that courtesy any other time other than the day for those children.
To make myself perfectly clear.
Yeah.
Okay?
So note the twisting of what's going on here. What was originally asserted to be a normal policy, and one would presume the usual thing that Andy Crane does, namely forward a report to the department, since neither Sunshine nor Pat had taken responsibility for the signs, would be to forward that report and not to make an arrest. Now he threatens to use the big club on the two of them, to arrest them, to threaten her very livelihood, to threaten the well-being of the children that she's taking care of. And then, to show how generous he is, this great defender of the people agrees not to do that. That is to say, namely, to do what he had said at first was the policy. And in being lenient, quote-unquote lenient to her, that is following the policy which he stated was originally the policy to begin with, he is just simply acting, quote, ordinarily with Pat Ring, who was later, shortly hereafter, taken to jail. The whole viciousness of this situation, regardless of the mild demeanor of Andy Crane, who as an individual is quite a friendly guy, but unfortunately because of his uniform and the job he's doing, what he's doing requires a particularly sinister quality to it. What he's doing is he's removing signs from a protest demonstration and taking people to jail for having posted them. That is a very serious breach of First Amendment activity, of First Amendment rights in our society. And for him to do this and to take initiative to try to extend it further, which is what he's doing, instead of simply sending a report back to the police department, sitting down, trying to work out what the sections are, but showing up, cutting them down, and giving everybody misdemeanor tickets, punishable by up to 6 months in jail, and then arresting them on those misdemeanor tickets, as he does to Patrick Ring, shows clearly the kind of malice and repressive mentality that is operating here. And I repeat, this whole thing is being witnessed by Mayor Mike Rutkin, who sat on the steps sort of smiling as all this happened.
A fourth police officer has arrived.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Wayne, is this your sign?
Yeah. Patrick Ring has answered that. Let me run to the sign. I'm going to have a photographer get over here.
Okay.
Who's to rest under the injunction?
Give him money back.
Is this way, go to sleep, go to jail, something like that?
That is the law. Sleeping at night is a crime, yeah, more or less. And there's a copy of the sleeping ban. So we have an officer's motorcycle is parked on the sidewalk, blocking the walkway. We have three officers in uniform and one officer partially in uniform. Sure. And this is all happening here right in front of City Hall at 809 Center Street, right across from the library. Arrests for signs, that's what's happening over here. Political signs are the basis of a six-month jail sentence here.
A relevant part as follows.
The relevant part as follows, and then it states what we should
do.
So,
that's
the only part that is relevant. Relevant, which they're choosing to ignore, yeah. You know, is what we complied with.
That's true.
That's the relevant part.
So there is no real arrest.
The city attorney is so inept that he can't write a proper injunction. You know, who's is that? So my fault?
Right. No. The actual specification of the injunction does talk about the relevant part.
The relevant part.
Nice work, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. The great socialist mayor continues to harass and oppress the poor.
600 Tobacco Farm.
You really must be an insensitive asshole, Mike Rockman. Fucking piece of shit.
You want your charges increased, Mr. Ray?
Hey, I don't give a fuck.
That's obvious.
I'm just asking a question. Against what? What charges? Another infringement on my First Amendment right?
Of the law.
Yeah, why not? While you're at it.
This section.
Yeah.
No portion of assignment.
Is it illegal to speak at City Hall now?
No.
Yeah, well, that's not what you just told me. You just told me I better shut up or something else is going to happen. I don't have to shut up.
Only the relevant portions.
For what? For speaking?
Including the injunction.
You're telling me I'm facing additional charges for speaking?
I asked the city attorney to get involved in this, so did he get involved?
Yeah, he got involved. Yeah, he sent him out here. He got involved, that's for sure. He's so incompetent that he couldn't write a proper injunction. He wrote an injunction. The only relevant part of the sign ordinance is what we complied with. He comes out and shows us something different. You know, why wasn't that relevant when Bill Sony drew up the injunction? You know, if it was relevant then, if it wasn't then, why is it relevant now? Now he's threatening to charge me with further charges for speaking. For speaking. For exercising my First Amendment right to free speech, verbally. He's just been threatening me with further charges.
You
threatened me. If I didn't shut up, I'd face further charges. For speaking. No, I have a First Amendment right to free speech. And if you want to do something about it, then do it.
This is the only part quoted in the injunction. So it seems to me, Sean Silas got a copy of the injunction, that there is definite
ambiguity. This motherfucker is sitting here with this evil grin on his fucking face. Piece of shit. Yeah, there's children there. One here, one there. And they say, this is
the whole municipal code. I'm not the judge. I have to interpret these things.
Which provides an irrelevant part as follows. Oh, it's irrelevant part, not the relevant part. That may be the...
Yeah.
We can talk about that.
The best part is totally incompetent.
So...
with the police force, the mayor...
I'm concerned that I don't understand how you could put something on a light pole that didn't protrude beyond the edge.
Right, exactly.
I don't understand.
And we're now talking to Celia Scott, a councilwoman who... as attorney and civil libertarian, opposed the injunction and also has been meeting with protesters and will be meeting again, indeed, at 10:30 on Monday, June 10th, to seek some kind of significant solution to the situation. Well, that's a charitable interpretation anyway.
Yes, it's copy the injunction. Yeah. So you're talking to Becky Johnson?
Having read through the ordinance, it doesn't specifically refer to signs on utility poles, or and it doesn't mention handheld signs.
Myself and take a look at it.
Yeah.
But I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. It seems that common sense may not be prevailing in this issue as Judge Stevens had requested from everyone.
These are the signs right here. The sentinel photographer has arrived. No doubt will start looking for poo-poo in the bushes, but we do have signs here that are being taken by the police department. What's your name?
My name is Carrie. I want to read this. Is this your copy?
You can have that, Carrie. You need, of course, a copy of the sign ordinance as well.
Where is that?
So Pat Ring is being taken to jail now. Pat, give us a call. So, do you have a number you can be reached at as a witness?
We have
Mayor Ratkin's left-wing Dan Hopkins started accusing him of falsely stating in the sentiment.
You see, he didn't disadmit it.
What had happened?
He's a liar.
In terms of the claims that there was human waste at City Hall.
He told a lie. That's how this injunction got started. And Joni accepted full responsibility for his allegations against the protesters who is not part of our protest.
So what about the signs, Dan? What's happened here with respect to the signs?
I just got here. I don't know.
I've been here. So this morning that we had the four signs up, we made sure that they were 14 inches, made sure the signs were no more than 14 inches as it specified in the injunction. They came back later with something else. I don't even know what the paper was that said that it couldn't protrude from the light post. Where in the court injunction it said that it could be affixed to a light post or a public telephone pole. And now someone, Pat, just got arrested, possible 6-month sentence for being responsible for putting the signs up.
Hi. What's your name?
My name's Catherine.
Catherine? Okay.
No, with the C.
Let me talk to the cops real quick and I'll come right back.
Yeah. And that was Sentinel reporter Tracy White showing up, talking to Catherine, one of the witnesses to all of this. Interestingly enough, no matter how hard the Sentinel tried, the story that they put out the next day in the Wednesday Sentinel, yesterday the Sentinel on Wednesday, June 5th, made the police look pretty ridiculous. The Sentinel buried the fact that we kept repeating this was a protest not against camping, but not against the camping ban, not for the right to sleep anywhere and everywhere, but for the right to sleep somewhere, to make limited changes in the camping law to make sleeping specifically legal for people after 11 o'clock at night. That fact never saw the light of day in the Sentinel, as it really hasn't seen the light of day in any kind of Sentinel news story that I can recall. But indeed, the police, through putting so much focus on removing a man for posting a sign, seem to be showing the iron fist under the velvet glove. It really seemed pretty clear. And ironically, at the bottom of the same page where that article appeared, or possibly it was the next day, there was a survey on should it be illegal to sleep outside in public, and 3 out of 4 people interviewed in the Man on the Street section said no. As is always the case, by the way, I've followed that Man on the Street section. The question has been asked several times, 4 or 5 times over the last decade. And each time, it's at least 3 out of 4 that say, no, it shouldn't be illegal. People should have the right to sleep at night. And indeed, I think that really reflects the Santa Cruz population's point of view on that. In spite of claims by the city council that they'd be voted down the road and dumped in the sewer and sent back to their homes in a recall election if they made any changes to the sleeping ban. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the recorded edition. I hope to be back with you on Monday if I'm still at liberty. Today I'm going to be in court in San Francisco, and today you get to hear interviews from the past week. Stay with us.
Crabs are crazy, they scuttle back and forth, the sand is burning, and the fish take flight and scatter from the side, their course is turning, as the seagulls rest on the cold cannon nest, the sea is churning, the marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. The fishermen sweat, they're pausing at their nets, the days are burning. As the warships sway and thunder in the bay, loud in the morning. But the boy on the shore is throwing pebbles no more, he runs a warning. That the Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. The streets are still, there's silence in the hills, the town is sleeping. And the farmers yawn in the gray silver dawn, the fields they're keeping. As the first troops land and step into the sand, the flags are weeping. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. The unsmiling sun is shining down upon the singing soldiers. In the cloud dust world, they whistle at the girls, they're getting bolder. Ah, the old women sigh, think of memories gone by, they shrug their shoulders. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. Ready for the tricks, their bayonets are fixed, now they are rolling. And the tanks make tracks past the trembling shacks where fear's unfolding. All the young wives afraid turn their backs to the parade with bibs they're holding. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. A bullet cracks the sound, the army hits the ground, the sniper's calling. So they open up their guns, 1,000 to 1, no sense in stalling. He clutches at his head and totters on the edge, look now he's falling. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. In the red plaza square, the crowds come to stare, the heat is leading. And the eyes of the dead are turning every head to the widow screaming. But the soldiers make a bid, giving candy to the kids, their teeth are gleaming. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. Up and down the coast, the generals drink a toast, the wheel is spinning. And the cowards and the whores are peeking through the doors to see who's winning. But the traitors will pretend that it's getting near the end when it's beginning. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo. And the crabs are crazy, they scuttle back and forth, the sand is burning. And the fish take flight and scatter from the side, their course is turning. As the seagulls rest on the cold cannon nest, the sea is churning. The Marines have landed on the shores of Santo Domingo.
And that was Phil Oakes. Santo Domingo, a song about the American invasion of the Dominican Republic back in 1965. I think we still got something to learn from that song. It's a beautiful song, too. The day that Pat Ring got taken to jail for 8 hours and now faces 6 months in jail for a sign that protrudes from a city hall lamppost, I had some very good interviews with some of the witnesses, and some of the witnesses were people not only whom I had never seen before, but also who had never seen the vigil before, but who showed up because they happened to be passing by and were first interested and finally outraged at what was going on there.
And to carry a witness here who is well-dressed and homeless. What kind of work do you do, Carrie?
I work at a hotel.
And why are you homeless? You choose this lifestyle?
No, I ran out of money.
And this is here in Santa Cruz where everyone is provided for? So are you sleeping illegally at night?
I've been sleeping at other people's houses.
Right.
And
you're not illegal yet?
I'm not illegal yet. I'm on my way.
So perhaps one of your concerns is that us today and you tomorrow, huh?
Exactly. But that I would care. I care anyway, you know. It's just that, you know, I'm a sociology student. I've studied a lot about what it's like to not have a home and to not have money. And we in Santa Cruz, we have an illusion. We pretend like everything's groovy, and it's fucking not, you know? It's not at all. So, that's that.
Hi. Did you know about the arrest that's happened here?
No, I don't know how much time
You just arrested somebody
for making a 14-year fine, and you take 6 months in jail for doing so.
He's not going to do 6 months, though. How long is he going to be kept in there for?
He'll be kept in there for 2 days until he's taken to court, and then unless he can make bail, he'll stay there until trial.
How much is bail?
Whenever they will, I can only
care. What's that?
How much is bail?
Who knows? It could be anywhere from 50 to... Bail could be anywhere from 500 to 5,000.
But then, okay, so...
Sure.
You better record him instead of me. He's more interesting.
No, you're more interesting. We hear him all the time. Thank you. As it happened, Pat was released 8 hours later, and his bail was nothing. It was OR'd out, which was good. However, people like Sean Alini, who was one of the two co-founders of the protest, has been held for 2 weeks, nearly 2 weeks, on a bail, and not allowed OR based on a special order by Judge Barton. Policy, by the way, that is denied by the city attorney. It denies there's any special treatment being given or punishment being levied against protesters because of judicial order. But nonetheless, that's the information we get from talking with Sergeant Clark and from overhearing his conversations with other police officers. Next to Becky Johnson talking to the Sentinel reporter, Tracy White, who did a puff piece on Mike Rotkin in last Sunday's Sentinel. You might have seen it. Had a big picture of the smiling Mike Rotkin, informally dressed, and did a lengthy story about him, which begins with his smearing the vigil as a place where people are just going poo-poo all over the lawn on City Hall and making the poor gardener clean it up, which is one of his key campaign lines. I don't know if he's running for office in November of 96 or what. This is a situation in which, if it were true, which it's not, he could remedy very easily by opening up a bathroom at night, but he prefers to give the demonstrators lots of negative publicity, even if it's based on concoctions and false stories. So here we were trying to track down the source, how it was that a front page story happened to be written in the Sentinel, and here is Becky Johnson talking to reporter Tracy White about the story.
This article about Mike Rotkin appear in Sunday's paper, this kind of like a feature article about Mike Rotkin. Do you know, I know you wrote it. Who was the impetus? Did you come up with the idea, or were you?
It's an editor's idea. He just thought it would be an interesting time to do a story on Mike Rotkin. I'm not even sure.
So was somebody on the editorial board?
Yeah, but I didn't have to do it if I wasn't interested in it.
We just thought the timing was rather interesting with the injunction having just been issued and some of the quotes that Mike Rotkin made at the beginning of the article we found particularly misleading. He continues to say that we're here protesting the camping ban when we've said time and time again and to Karen Clark that we're here because of the sleeping ban.
Sleeping sections of camping.
The sleeping section and the covering up with blankets section that we want struck. We're not asking for the right to camp anywhere.
Not asking
willy-nilly.
For
camps or repeal the camping ban.
So what are you asking for?
Three things. We want the sleeping portion completely struck. It's a waste of...
Sleeping portion, I'll give you a copy of the law. Says that if you sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night, anywhere in public at all, and anywhere in private with the exception of a backyard or fenced-in side yard, in any vehicle, in any non-domicile, it is a sleeping ban. That section is a sleeping ban.
11 to 8:30 in the morning.
Then the second section is a covering up of blankets ban between 11 and 8:30. And it makes essentially the same provision. You cannot cover up with blankets anywhere except, ironically, inside a car. You can cover up with blankets inside a car. You can't sleep inside a car, but you can cover up with blankets inside a car. So there is that exception.
Let me talk to Catherine in case she has to leave, because I need to talk to who is here.
Catherine's been here for a while, right? Yeah, so the third section of the ban, if you want to get this accurately, again, to summarize, it's a sleeping ban, a covering up with blankets section, and the third section is... But Tracy White was not interested in what we had to say, and indeed, the next day when the story appeared, not a word appeared about the real demands of the protesters, but instead it was the old story, the Rotkin line about the camping ban, and sleeping anywhere and everywhere and so forth. So the story has yet to come out, really, in the Sentinel and other mainstream media like the San Jose Mercury News. Of course, the Chronicle hasn't covered it at all, but hey. If you listen to this station, you'll get the straight story. And this is, of course, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and you are listening to the recorded edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, a twice-weekly show on civil rights for the poor in Santa Cruz. I'm your host, Bathrobes, Pier Norse, the keeper of the archives, and the archives are what you're listening to today because I'm up in the city trying to deal with some court problems around the free food issue, which may surface again on June 11th, as I've mentioned several times in the show, when we plan to be serving free food 6:30 in the evening, Tuesday night at City Council. right before city council, I might say, in order to put a little broth in the belly before heading in to talk to the bully boys on the council. We call them bully boys because their injunction punishes people for up to 6 months for engaging in elementary free speech rights in front of City Hall and trying to sleep at night. Signs more than 14 inches, signs not handheld, now become the basis for criminal prosecutions. Bully boys. And I should say bully girls. The council is 5-2 women. The next interview is really a rare one that was sort of a strange surprise. I got a call from Frank of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Frank is the new operations director, I believe, of the Community House Project, which you've often heard me lambasting on this station. Community House is a trailer project costing about $1.3 million involving donated trailers plopped down on top of the property at Highway 1 and Highway 9, called, which previously was the place for the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, the only homeless campground in Santa Cruz where people could actually sleep without fear of being arrested at night under the sleeping ban. Successfully operated, not very well done actually, but successful in terms of what we are now facing, but miserably underfunded and a number of problems. But the main problem was the bad faith with which the operators, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, ran it. Now you'll hear me discussing all these issues again, because what I have here is a freewheeling interview with a CCH employee. This is almost unheard of. CCH evicted me from its meetings, threatened me with trespass, refused to hear the tape-recorded 45-second contract that I recorded between Daryl Darling, Paul Marceau, and the campers of the open-air shelter, which they then blithely violated in December of this last year, kicking all these people out. But Frank was willing to talk about it. He, in fact, invited me out to dinner. We sat down, we had a freewheeling discussion, and he further had no objection to it being recorded for broadcast. I find this a very encouraging sign. I'm going to let you make your own decision about what kind of a guy this man is. He didn't give a lot of persuasive statements in here, but his willingness to talk and talk publicly I found very refreshing. Perhaps simply because he's a new face. Rotkin, the mayor, is willing to talk publicly, but what he says is a repeated statement, what I regard as a tissue of not so much lies as misrepresentations and deflections and distortions. So let's hear what Frank has to say. You get to hear me, Becky Johnson, Frank, and I believe Frank's wife sometimes speaks a bit too. That's Tanya.
Unfortunately, this segment of the tape is either damaged or the recorder was playing too slow, and I'm now speaking. This voice is from 2024, June of 2024. So we're skipping ahead to the next audible section of the flashback that you're going to be able to hear back in 1996, also from June of 1996, or also from June anyway.